I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, it has never been more clear. The Fourth Estate is broken. The question is, can it be repaired? Plus, in Washington State, which side is actually attacking democracy? And a local children's hospital segregated doctors by race in an effort to teach them not to be racist. We'll discuss that and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. And man, I am happier than ever to be sitting right here with you, sitting right here with Nicole, and not sitting in some TV studio somewhere hating my life because journalism isn't what I signed up for. I get it that the media bias has been pretty obvious for a long time. I think I woke up to that around the time I quit my job in TV to do this show with all of you. It took me, I think I was a little late to catch on to the fact that the media was just dripping with bias against conservatives. But look, you know, I'm happy to be here. Gosh, I'm so glad I jumped off that ship while it was sinking in time to survive it. But I guess I never thought it would be this bad. Truly, I never thought it could get this bad. And there have been some examples, both locally and nationally, in the last couple weeks that are so black and white, that are so obvious and apparent. I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's liberal, and I just was asking, like, do you see it? I guess, do you see that the media as a whole, as an ecosystem, is incredibly biased in favor of Democrats? And I was just like, please tell me yes. And they actually said, well, yeah, I think that's pretty obvious. And so it was just like this recognition that, okay, other people see it too. And the question is, you know, do they care, right? And before I dive into this, because I want to spend the first block of the show today detailing some of what we've seen in recent weeks, I want to be clear that I'm leaving out of this conversation outlets that are biased intentionally. You know, MSNBC, I don't think MSNBC pretends to be neutral. The host might think they're being fair or whatever it is, but that's clearly MSNBC is designed for people on the left. It's the same way that Fox News is designed for people on the right. What I'm talking about here are the legacy media outlets, TV, print, radio, that hold themselves up as some sort of beacon of the First Amendment and the Fourth Estate and unbiased news, talking about the CNNs, the NBCs, the CBSs, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and here locally, the TV stations, the Seattle Times. So, you know, I've always said, I say it over and over, I'm not a journalist. 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 Because invariably when I report on something on social media, I'll have trolls who say, oh, real great journalism, Brandi. And I have to say, I say all the time, I'm not a journalist. I'm a political commentator. I do my opinion. But I will say, not to toot my own horn, toot toot, but I feel like on this show, what we do more closely resembles the intent of a free press, the intent of the Fourth Estate, than most actual journalism outlets. To me, the fundamental job and the fundamental reason we have the First Amendment and a free press where the government can't tell us what to do or shut us down if we're not reporting on things they like we're China or North Korea, the fundamental reason why it's so important is because you hold powerful people accountable. You're a check on the people in power. You're a check on the government for the people. And if you're not doing that, then what are you doing? And I'm not saying that the media can't include other things like the occasional fun story and, you know, news on where you can get the best hamburger or whatever it is. Like, fine, all of that has its place, celeb news, whatever it is. But the reason the free press exists is to hold the government accountable and to hold powerful people accountable. And I think there's a lot of reasons why that is just not happening. One is just the demise of old media, which I like the Free Press with Barry Weiss. They've started calling it kind of old media and new media, us being new media, them being old media. And I kind of like that versus, you know, legacy or establishment media or whatever it is. You know, they're dwindling, their ratings suck, their subscriptions suck. There's a reason for that. I think a lot of people see the bias in it. So they don't have the bodies. They don't have the number of journalists to be able to do the work that they used to do. So that's part of it. But the other thing is just an absolute built-in bias into these newsrooms, where if they're in a state like Washington where Democrats are in power, well, most of them are tried and true bleeding blue liberals. And they don't have the desire, the pull to hold people of their own political persuasion accountable in the way that they do, you know, Republicans. And in our state, there's not a lot of Republicans making any decisions of consequence. So then they just, you know, what, focus on other stories, other things, or Orange Man Bad, Donald Trump. Like, God, what are they going to do when Donald Trump isn't around anymore? I mean, that man could die and they would be talking about him and blaming him for things 30 years from now. It's just crazy. I don't know how to get this through to people to expect. You have to expect more of the free press. Because if they're not holding the powerful accountable, then we might as well, frankly, get rid of the First Amendment. We might as well have state-run media, because that's kind of, in essence, what it is already. I promise you, you don't want to see what the United States looks like if we don't have a robust fourth estate holding powerful people accountable anymore. And we are damn dangerously close. So I want to go through some examples of things that, to me, are so black and white that no one can deny it. Absolutely undeniable that our media ecosystem is corrupted, is fundamentally broken, and is so biased toward one side of the aisle that I don't know that it can be repaired. I don't know that it can be fixed. So I'll just start locally with a frustration of mine. You know, we have this story we've been, you know, really going hard on ever since Friday when we found out that the Attorney General, the Secretary of State knew that there was a lawsuit challenging all these initiatives that 1.2 million voters signed on to, and they just thought it would be fine to sort of stay quiet about it. And it's one thing, again, I'm in favor of the initiatives. I have a bias. I'm a political commentator. So it's one thing for me to rail about those things. But as I argued on the show yesterday, there were numerous reasons that a free press should have reported on this issue. One of them being that Bob Ferguson doesn't support the initiatives and that the lawsuit was funded by one of his biggest campaign donors. So, like, if you're a journalist looking at that, you have to be able to see that and say, wait a second, why is our attorney general defending the state and the people against a lawsuit brought by one of his biggest campaign donors that is seeking to undermine initiatives that he's on the record saying he doesn't support? So that, more than anything, is a very cut and dry corruption level issue. A clear question of abuse of power that any real journalist should be willing to look at and is important enough for them to cover. But since Friday, what do you think are the only outlets that have covered this story? Opinion outlets that are conservative, and then print outlets that, frankly, lean a little bit conservative or are more sympathetic to conservative causes. Nicole went and she dug the depths of the internet, seeing if we missed something. KTTH, conservative radio station. KVI, conservative radio station. The Center Square, Linwood Times, I don't think that they're blatantly conservative, but they are certainly outlets that are more willing to hold the party in power accountable. And we've seen that. So we're talking about, really, it's only four other outlets, because My Northwest is KTTH, essentially. They're the same company in the same building. So none of the mainstream outlets saw fit. I saw the Washington State Standard did a story, but it was kind of on a different lawsuit against the initiatives, and it just mentioned all of these dealings as kind of a footnote, frankly, in the story. So you have this, really, there's so many angles that you could attack this on. If you don't choose to go with the angle that I've chosen to go with as a political commentator, and that is that I feel like AG Bob Ferguson left voters in the dark intentionally. That's my opinion. There are so many other angles on that story that aren't opinion, that are just fact, like I talked about, like Nick Hanauer, a progressive billionaire funding Defend Washington, which is the entity that brought the lawsuit against the Secretary of State, and somehow AG Bob Ferguson thinks it's appropriate for his office to handle that. That is a clear conflict of interest. Can one freaking news station, one, Seattle Times, King, Como, Cairo, Fox 13, can anyone, hell, I'll take the Tacoma News Tribune, I don't care. Can anyone ask a question of A.G. Ferguson's office about why they would involve themselves in such a clear conflict of interest? That's not asking a lot. It wouldn't be biased for them to do that. It would be the very fundamental, like, bottom shelf duty of their job. Are they so overwhelmed with other stories? What's been going on? It's insane to me. And then you look nationally. I've never seen a better illustration of media bias than CBS News and how they covered two identical proposals, one from Donald Trump, the other from Kamala Harris, 1 month apart. Honest to God, this is how CBS News covered these. Donald Trump was the first one to say, we don't want to tax tips. And then a month later, Kamala Harris is like, hey, I don't want to tax tips. Just ripped it off from Donald Trump. That's fine. It's okay to have two candidates of two different parties say they want to do the same thing, but here's how CBS News covered it. Never seen a better example. For Trump, a month ago, former President Donald Trump's vow to stop taxing tips would cost the federal government up to $250 billion over 10 years. And then when Kamala Harris came out, Vice President Kamala Harris is rolling out a new policy position saying she'll fight to end taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers. Are you kidding me? Not a better example. If you don't see the bias there, genuinely, like, you can't be helped. You are so ideologically driven that you're choosing not to see it. And frankly, the way they cover Donald Trump is better. That's preferable to me. Where you have a presidential candidate who rolls out a policy proposal and you're looking at, okay, what are the impacts of this policy proposal? Hey, this watchdog group says it'll cost us $250 billion over 10 years. That's journalism. I'm fine with that. What I'm not fine with is when Kamala Harris steals it, rolls out the same policy a month later, it's like a campaign story, rolling out a new policy position to help service and hospitality workers. That's not journalism. And there are so many elements to this story that if the media was doing its job, it would point out. One of them being, and Nicole, can you go to the Biden 2023 tax plan? So not only is this like some, it's kind of hilarious because Kamala's just copying Donald Trump a month later. The Biden administration, with VP Kamala Harris, in 2023, they rolled out a program with the intent of cracking down via the IRS on waiters' tips. They literally rolled out a program called the Service Industry Tip Compliance Agreement with the goal of improving tip reporting compliance. So now, a year after that, Kamala Harris is saying, I don't want to tax tips. And then Karine Jean-Pierre was asked, well, what about Biden? Because, you know, he did the whole IRS thing a year ago. Does he support Kamala Harris's new position on not taxing tips? Here's what she said.
Yeah. Absolutely. Look, this is something that the president supports. He supports eliminating taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
That's new. Like, that's brand new. All of a sudden, it'll help Kamala Harris because Trump said it and it was really popular. And oh my God, we can't let him win the working class and waiters and waitresses and service workers. So it's like, oh, forget what we did in 2023 with trying to like make sure that we had better tracking of tips by using the point in time systems or whatever they're called. What are those called? Why can't I think of the name of that? It's the, now it's going to bother me. You know, the system. What do you call the little system?
The system.
Like where you pay with a card.
Like a credit?
POS? Point of sale. A point of sale system.
There you go.
I don't know why that bothered me so much. Whew. So they're just totally making it up. It's just ridiculous. In the media, there was a couple outlets that called Kamala Harris out on just all of a sudden adopting Trump's idea from a month ago. But that CBS, I cannot think of a better example. And it's like, oh my God, you're supposed to be a free press acting independently of the government. You're supposed to hold people in power accountable. What are you doing? What a waste. Like, is that what you joined? Is that what you got into the journalism field to do? I think, unfortunately, a lot of people in journalism, as I saw on TV, they think they're really attractive and pretty and they want to be on TV. Frankly, if I'm being honest, that's what a lot of it is on TV, is people who want to be on TV for the sake of being on TV, and they could not care any less about being actual journalists. So that's a fundamental issue as well. So then moving on, just again, some more examples that are just absolutely insane. The front page of the Time Magazine, with Kamala Harris on it. I mean, you've seen all the Time Magazine front pages where it's been Donald Trump. It's like, oh, they did a picture of his face melting, saying he was having a meltdown. I'm skipping ahead, Nicole, sorry. So they do this like, oh, picture of Kamala Harris, like looking up, surrounded by this illustration of her supporters all around her. And the font says, her moment. Isn't that nice? So they do this, oh, Time Magazine feature on her moment. Isn't that great? And then they note in there that she wouldn't even talk to them for the story. And they also note that she has yet to do a substantive interview to explain her policy positions. Yet despite that, they're still doing this. Oh, look at her. Her moment. Isn't this wonderful? She could be the first female president. There's just this groundswell of support for her. People are so enthusiastic. She won't even talk to them for the story. This is mental. It's mental. That's not journalism. It's fangirling. And I feel the same way. But, you know, the issue with conservative media is that there are not a lot of outlets that pretend to be neutral outlets that are like super right leaning. Like there are elements of like the Fox newsroom, for instance, like Brett Baer. I think Brett Baer is pretty fair. I think he does a pretty good job. But by and large, you have hosts on Fox News that don't hide the fact that they have a conservative bias. But you do have outlets that are not supposed to be biased that lean left. I cannot really think of an example of an outlet that pretends to be, that puts itself forth as a neutral purveyor of news that actually has a hard right bias. So it happens far more with a left-leaning bias. So then there was this live X thing, space on X, with former President Donald Trump and Elon Musk, where Elon Musk came out and he said, hey, I'm going to host, you know, Trump came back to X after Twitter had like banned his account, and then they unbanned him, and he said, well, I'm not going to come back anyway. Well, he decided to come back. Now he's tweeting on X. So Elon Musk said, we're going to host this live space where I'm going to have a conversation. That's what Elon said. He said before, this is not an interview. I'm not interviewing the former president. We're going to have a conversation about issues, and like more than a million live concurrents at one point. It had a rocky start. Apparently there was like a DDoS attack is what they said. But it got going, and it was just what you would expect. It was a conversation between Donald Trump and Elon Musk. It was not a news interview. Yet before it happened, oh my God, the meltdown from the media that Elon Musk would use his platform to have a conversation with the former president of the United States. There's this clip on CNN where they were saying, well, you know, almost like, well, Elon's not a journalist. So like, how can he do this? Nobody but a journalist can sit down with the former president. Here's the clip.
Well, for one, I think it's going to be a very lighthearted conversation because Elon Musk has come out and endorsed Donald Trump. I expect this to be like a bromance type of an interview where they're supporting each other. I think that Elon Musk will let Donald Trump speak all of the falsehoods and misinformation that he wants. I mean, he's not a journalist. It's not his job necessarily. Does he want to be fact-checking all of the information? So I think it's just a platform for Donald Trump to come out and say whatever he wants. But the thing to remember, Kessie, is like interview audience here is what Donald Trump needs. You see J.D. Vance going on Face the Nation, right? Sunday shows, traditional media, because he needs to get his name out there. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump's going the opposite route, right? He's talking to streamers and podcasters. He's going on X. He wants to rally up that sort of fringe online base. That's what Donald Trump is doing here tonight.
Well, he's meanwhile threatening to sue establishment media like the New York Times, etc.
Yeah, and she says, oh, you know, Elon Musk, he's not a journalist. He's not going to be fact-checking this. You guys don't even fact-check things. Well, you fact-check Donald Trump, but you won't fact-check Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. So you're acting like you're the arbitrator of facts when you don't fact-check one entire side of the political aisle, almost ever. And then this one was actually terrifying. It was a Washington Post reporter who was in the briefing room, and honest to God, this is before the thing with Elon and Trump, sounded like he wanted to know whether the White House would or could somehow stop this conversation between Trump and Elon Musk from happening at all.
Elon Musk is slated to interview Donald Trump tonight on X. I don't know if the president is going to tune in. Feel free to say if he is or not. But I think that misinformation on Twitter is not just a campaign issue. It's a, you know, it's an America issue. What role does the White House or the president have in sort of stopping that, or stopping the spread of that, or sort of intervening in that? Some of that was about campaign misinformation, but, you know, it's a wider thing, right?
Yeah, no, and you've heard us talk about this many times from here, about the responsibilities that social media platforms have when it comes to misinformation, disinformation. Don't have anything to read out from here about specific ways that we're working on it, but we believe that they have the responsibility. These are private companies, so we're also mindful of that, too. Look, it is. I think it is incredibly important to call that out as you're doing. I just don't have any specifics on what we have been doing internally as it relates to the interviews. Not something that I'm tracking, and I'm sure the president's not tracking it either.
Yeah, as usual, Karine Jean-Pierre's answer means absolutely nothing. What's problematic there is that somebody who is in a position so powerful that they can be in the briefing room and be able to ask questions to the spokesperson of the President of the United States wants to use their power and their influence to essentially suggest that the White House should somehow be shutting down or limiting the spread of a conversation. I mean, that's anti-First Amendment. You have journalists sitting in the White House briefing room who are anti-First Amendment when it comes to views and people they don't agree with. That's so indicative of the sad state of the Fourth Estate. That's terrifying stuff. I mean, that's China stuff. Again, that's North Korea stuff. That's not supposed to be the United States of America. And when you have the media that is so far gone like that, it hurts. It's going to hurt every single American. I would argue it already does. But if this continues at the pace it's continuing, I mean, and we really have a media that is 90% beholden to one political party and just refuses to hold them accountable for anything. That's a really scary place to be in as a country. And then I have to wonder, do Americans see this? You know, do they see what's happening? Are they worried about what's happening? I don't know the answer to that. I do know that on Colbert Report last night, Caitlin Collins with CNN was one of his guests, and the audience gave me a little bit of hope that they are, in fact, seeing what's happening with old media.
Trump has kind of been thrown on his heels by this, and he's not really sure how to go after Vice President Harris. He knew his attack lines on President Biden. He really has struggled with how to go after someone who's 20 years younger than him, who is a different gender, a different race. It's kind of been this moment where he has not been able to coalesce around a single attack line.
I know you guys are objective over there, that you just report the news as it is.
Oh, I know. CNN makes it. I know.
That's supposed to be a laugh line.
I wasn't supposed to be, but I guess it is.
I guess it is. You got to love that. Stephen Colbert's audience laughing, thinking he's telling a joke when he says that CNN is unbiased and shoots it straight. So, yes, I think some Americans are waking up to this reality. Now, it depends on what you watch. I mean, if you know, I have some family members who all they're watching is MSNBC. And that's the silo that they're watching, that they're getting their information and news from. And they might not know. They might genuinely not know that they're being spun a tale. I know people who only watch CNN. And if you only watch CNN, that you're probably led to believe that Donald Trump is this existential threat to our democracy. And Kamala Harris has all these great ideas like not taxing tipped workers. I don't know where we go from here. I mean, it has gotten horrible, worse than I ever expected that it would. And frankly, I don't know that this is the answer either. I don't know that this rise of independent media, which in a lot of ways is the wild, wild west, I don't know that it's the answer either. I worry about it all the time. When I quit my job in TV, and then we'll move on because I spent way more time on this than I intended. When I quit my job in TV, I really felt like I was at the peak of my career. Like everything was going great for me. You know, I had been talking to my agent about maybe going to one of the networks, trying to get a job at one of the networks, moving out of the state, moving to New York or DC. And, you know, I kind of saw all these things that disappointed me in the local media ecosystem and our coverage of things like the riots and the pandemic, et cetera. And then I started to realize, well, those things exist nationally as well. Like, I'm going to be just as disappointed. And I talked to some friends who had worked at some of the networks, and they're like, this is, you know, this is how it is here too. And so what I came to the conclusion that I felt like old media needed to be broken down to the studs and built back up. And so I see that kind of as our role is, you know, showing that we can, you know, continuing to do the things that we think are important, like watchdog journalism, but also criticizing the media, pointing out what's happening with the media. And honestly, hopefully, through me and others who are doing what we're doing independently, demolishing the old media and giving rise to a new version of it that is more in keeping with what the First Amendment was all about, is more in keeping with what we need from the Fourth Estate. So I think there has to be a slingshot effect. I don't believe that the proliferation of independent outlets is the answer. I don't think it's sustainable. You know, we don't play, frankly, I'm just going to be honest, you know, independent media, you don't have rules. We have the rules that we choose to have. And we have our conscience and our commitment to making sure that, yes, we bring you opinions, but we're bringing you factual information. And if we ever get something wrong, we have, you know, a conscience and we want to correct that because our goal is always to give you factual information. But who's holding us accountable to that? I mean, I guess subscribers, right? If you feel like we're on here and we're just spitting falsehoods, then you'll cancel your subscriptions. And then that hurts us financially. We can't do the show, et cetera, et cetera. But when you have these independent reporters who they're sharing their stuff on social media, they don't technically work for anyone. There's no rules for them. There's no like belief that they have to behave a certain way. And I don't think that's really good either, because then you're relying on each independent journalist to sort of have their own standards that they're holding themselves to. So something has to change. I think independent media, what maybe will happen in the next 5 years, independent media, X as a platform for politicians to reach people directly, you know, this will become so big and it'll be so numerous. And old media will just fail because their ratings will suck and people will cancel their subscriptions. And then you have this sort of slingshot effect where the independent stuff is just too much. It's overwhelming. And so, you know, then you coalesce and you have a few like outlets that are reborn from that mess, that are trustworthy, that understand why old media failed. So I hope we're part of that. I think we are part of that, but it's just horrifying to me as someone who wanted to be a journalist since the age of six, genuinely, or not six, since the sixth grade, I wanted to be a journalist. And everything I did from sixth grade on was in pursuit of that end. And then I got my dream job and I was doing my dream job and I woke up one day and said, this is not what I wanted to do in the sixth grade. This is not what inspired me to do this job. So it's just, it's a really scary situation we're in as America. And people need to wake up to that fact and they need to wake up to it real, real quick. All right, coming up next, I want to detail for you. You know, we hear a lot about, oh, democracy is in peril and you know, there won't be a peaceful transition of power if Trump doesn't win and all these things. But here in Washington state, again, the media is ignoring a lot of instances many instances, increasing instances of the party in power, that being the Democrats, attacking our democracy. We're going to detail it point by point coming up next. First, there's a lot going on, both globally, here nationally, you know, the presidential election, things seem to be changing by the day. The markets last week started off in a real bad place. And so when you're looking at your retirement, you know, you only get one retirement, right? You want to make sure that you have someone managing your money who is specializing in managing risk. Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital do that. I mean, that's their number one focus. Zach literally has a radio show called KnowYourRiskRadio.com where they talk about the importance of managing your risk. You only get one retirement. You know, risk is always part of the equation when it comes to investments, but that, you know, doesn't mean that you have to take unnecessary risks. And it does mean you should have someone who understands that and who's looking at what's happening globally, nationally, et cetera. And they're making changes based on those things. So you can learn about Bulwark Strategies' focus on managing risk with their free Common Sense Investing Guide. You can get yours by visiting knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. This is kind of a continuation, really, of the first half hour of the show. You can tell I'm on a bender today about ranting about this because I just think it's that important. And there are so many easy, obvious examples of what's happening. And so you know that when the media doesn't pick up on it, it's a choice they're making. It's a choice they're making to ignore it. And one of those things are threats to democracy from Democrats. And I'm talking specifically about Washington State. You know, you'll hear Bob Ferguson and other Democrats and the chair of the state Democratic Party talk about Donald Trump being an existential threat to our very existence as a nation and to our democracy and our democratic republic. And now, I'm not saying that there aren't things to be worried about former President Donald Trump. Yeah, I think the media had every right to look at what happened on January 6th, 3 years ago, and be like, that was scary stuff. I agree it was scary stuff. But I am unable to take them seriously when they're constantly talking about Donald Trump and Republicans being a threat to democracy and acting like that is such a big issue. And then absolutely ignoring at the very same time obvious efforts to undermine our democracy from Democrats. Again, like, you can talk about Trump and concerns about the threats he poses to our country and democracy, but I'm not going to take you seriously unless you're also talking about things that Democrats are doing to undermine our democracy. As a journalist, you can and should be doing both. Picking and choosing just shows your bias. And there are so many examples just in the last few months, really in the first 8 months of the year, that show that Democrats in our state are increasingly emboldened to try to undermine our democratic process. One example is just this week with a group called Defend Washington that sued over the initiatives trying to disenfranchise 1.2 million Washington voters who signed their names to those initiatives, trying to make sure that you don't even have a chance to vote. That's what they want. It's not about beating you, you know, beating the yes on the initiatives at the ballot box. That's one thing. They have every right in the world to try to sell their case and say, we want you to vote no on these things. This lawsuit was about keeping them off the ballot altogether. How terrifying is that? They didn't even want you to be able to vote. Is that not an attack on our democracy? And in case you're wondering, well, is Defend Washington a Democratic organization? Yes, they are. They're a very progressive organization. And one of their funders, as we described in detail on the show yesterday, is Nick Hanauer of Civic Ventures. He's the number one contributor to Defend Washington. He's also a big contributor to Attorney General Bob Ferguson, a Democrat who is the front runner to become the next governor of the state of Washington. And it's really no surprise that Nick Hanauer would support Bob Ferguson and support a group that is trying to undermine our democracy, because Bob Ferguson is also trying to undermine our democracy. You'll recall that he came out on television and asked the Secretary of State to break election law for him.
So we're asking the Secretary of State to either move my name up, sort of second, essentially, above those two, or move them down below me.
And why wouldn't Bob Ferguson get on TV in front of TV cameras and explicitly ask the Secretary of State of his own party to break election law on his behalf? Why wouldn't he think he can get away with that when his own party has gotten away with really terrifying words and actions about undermining our democratic process for the better part of a year? You'll recall when we were collecting signatures for the initiatives, what did the Democratic Party do and what did progressive organizations do? They started tip lines, snitch lines. They pushed them out and said, if you see someone gathering signatures, what they're doing is harmful. We have to fight back. They said, call us and report a signature gatherer. Let us know what they're wearing. Take pictures of them. Is it any surprise then that some signature gatherers were harassed, that in at least one instance, a woman crossed out signatures? The Democratic Party and groups like Fuse Washington were encouraging it, encouraging the harassment of people who were lawfully collecting signatures, a right afforded to them under our state constitution. And that's not worthy of the media talking about? That's not an attack, a terrifying attack on our democracy? I'd also go back to Speaker of the House Lori Jenkins when those initiatives qualified to be sent to the legislature. What did she say about, again, this initiative process that is an important part of our democracy? She said she was saddened by what it had become.
I'm very saddened when I think about why the initiative process was established in this state. Now what do we have is an ultra-wealthy multimillionaire buying his way onto the ballot and putting initiatives on the ballot that are going to benefit his ultra-wealthy status.
Yeah, never mind the 1.2 million voters who signed their names to those initiatives as part of the democratic process. So again, like, yeah, talk about Donald Trump. Like, let's talk about reasonable concerns you have about what happened, you know, 3.5 years ago, whether it could happen again. I'm fine. It's your job as the media to hold powerful people accountable and to be concerned about the future of our country. But I refuse to take you seriously when you ignore an attorney general, the state's chief law enforcer, who asked the Secretary of State to break the law. I refuse to take you seriously when you don't call out progressive groups who right now are trying to use lawfare to keep Washington voters from being able to decide on the initiatives. I refuse to take you seriously when you don't see and say anything about the Democratic Party that is actively attacking the initiative process and saying they're saddened by it, etc. et cetera, et cetera. And then they just get away with it. And so then they're more emboldened, like, hey, keep talking about how Donald Trump's a threat to our democracy while we actively try to consolidate our power and undermine our democracy. And just the latest example of this, it just came out yesterday. This is from the Washington State Standard. The Washington Democratic Party right now is pushing to keep RFK Jr. off the ballot. I mean, they don't even want, again, they don't want you to have a choice. They do not want you to have a choice to choose RFK Jr. over their choice, Kamala Harris. So they're attacking our democracy and trying to keep RFK Jr. off the ballot, according to the Standard. The group contends the 4,181 signatures submitted by We the People, a group in support of Kennedy's nomination, were not collected at a party convention as required by state law, making him ineligible to be one of the voters' choices. Kennedy's campaign website listed various events and locations, like the Olympia Farmers Market, where registered voters could sign nomination petitions, but that doesn't comport with the law's requirement, Democratic Party lawyers argued. Washington law says a convention can be a meeting of as few as 100 registered voters. If there are multiple conventions, each must have its own notice. While We the People submitted affidavits showing public notices for conventions, it did not hold any, Democratic Party lawyers argue in their letter. So again, you can't just let voters have a choice. Like here, they collected signatures to be able to get RFK Jr. on the ballot because there were some Washington voters here who wanted to have him as a choice. But the Democratic Party, very content and confident in the fact that it can try to undermine our democratic process without the media calling them out on it, is going to try to remove him from the ballot because they do not want you to have a choice. They do not want you to be able to fully exercise your rights as part of this country, this state, as voters. So tell me again, like, how does this make sense to anyone? Am I going crazy? Tell me if I'm going crazy. Nicole, am I going crazy?
I don't believe so.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, I'm crazy, but like,
I know,
not about
you've
this.
Already gone crazy, but not about this.
Now I'm like full blown mental. I mean, again, you know, there's a lot of like, I think sometimes there is TDS in the media where they go way too far with Donald Trump and picking him apart. But I would rather that than this. I would rather you go way too far and you're way too harsh on people in power than completely ignoring everything nefarious that they do. So spare me the democracy in peril bullshit until you are willing to look at all the ways that the Democratic Party in our state is putting our democracy in peril. Speaking of democracy in peril, since Bob Ferguson could not be bothered to have a press conference or let voters know that all of our initiatives were in jeopardy, tomorrow in the city of Seattle, Let's Go Washington is going to have the press conference that Bob Ferguson should have had. They're calling it a rally for democracy. It's happening tomorrow at 3 p.m. outside the Seattle office of the Attorney General, 800 Fifth Avenue. I told him they sent this flyer yesterday, and I said, that's savage. It says rally for democracy. The press conference Attorney General Bob Ferguson should have had. And all of you are welcome. The media won't stand up for our democracy. Well, I guess we just have to keep doing it. Nicole, are we going to be there?
We're going to be there.
Okay, I don't do anything without you telling me I can do it. So that's good. We're going to be there.
Security.
We're going to be at the Rally for Democracy. You are welcome to join us. And we're going to tell Bob Ferguson exactly how we feel about him keeping 1.2 million Washington voters in the dark over a lawsuit brought about by one of his campaign donors, Nick Hanauer. So join us for that. While you're at it, also make plans to join us on Saturday at the Summer Freedom Fest 2024. It is the second annual Summer Freedom Fest. It is being held at Brian Haywood's personal ranch in Redmond. There's going to be a stage, live music, food trucks, vendors, Nicole and I, even my husband's going to be there, bring a lawn chair, hear from political candidates. And by the way, they invite political candidates across the political spectrum. We'll see which ones show up. Oddly, Bob Ferguson didn't come last year. He didn't take him up on their offer to let him speak on stage in front of some freedom-loving Washingtonians. But I'll tell you, Summer Freedom Fest Round 1 was really fun last summer. They planned it in like 2.5 or 3 weeks. So I anticipate that this will be a good time as well. We'll have our Common Sense 2024 merch there if you care to buy a t-shirt or anything like that. And we'll be there to just chat. So I'm happy to take part in Summer Freedom Fest 2024. It's happening 4:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. at Willowcrest Stables in Redmond. So we've got that information up for you. We'll continue to push it out on social media this week.
And again, Kelly really needs volunteers.
Oh, yes. They really need volunteers to help them out with a variety of things, you know, setting
fun
up,
stuff.
Tearing down, helping direct people to park. So if you go to letsgowa.com, you can sign up for a volunteer window. And I know they would sure appreciate it.
Cool property.
Oh my God, it's so cool. And so it really is fun. And the music's great. And they set up a whole big stage. They do it right. So it's going to be an absolute blast.
They're going to have inflatables for the children.
I might even go on the inflatables.
Maybe.
Who's going to tell me no?
Right?
Who's going to tell me
I'm
no?
In.
Are they going to have a security guard keeping me off the inflatable over my dead body? I'll be on that inflatable. Unless it's the ball pit thing. Because I always fear that like I will sink to the bottom
you'll
of the ball pit and they'll
the
never
pits.
Find me. Have you ever seen those viral videos of like slightly overweight adults like falling into the ball pit and then they have to send in a rescue team to like pull them out?
I may have missed the rescue team being sent
I'll,
in.
I'll but... send you a video. I saw one the other day and it was very funny.
Okay.
I mean like that is my dignity can't.
No.
I can't survive.
Well,
that.
I don't think you're morbidly obese, so thankfully you found.
Wow, thank you. That's good to hear.
Inside weight loss has helped you with
I love
you
how
that.
You had to. Wait, are you saying I was morbidly obese?
Helped you keep from that.
And also, why did you have to say I don't think you're morbidly obese? Does that mean you think I'm obese?
I don't even think an obese
Holy
person
smokes.
Would get lost in the ball pit. I think that you would have to have some real medical issues to
I'm
get
offended.
Lost in the ball pit.
I feel really out of breath. I feel like the first 45 minutes of the show have just been one big rant.
Dang, we haven't even got to unbelievable yet.
Of word soup. We'll get to unbelievable coming up next. And it is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. as the name suggests. I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark challenge. Why? I think there's a couple reasons. If you're handling your insurance needs on your own right now, man, that's a struggle. Going out, trying to figure out, do I have the insurance I need? Do I have it at the best price? Why would you not use an insurance broker that does it for you for free? That's been doing it for a long time, like First Mark Insurance. They're a local company. One of the best parts about them is they actually, a human being that's local picks up the phone when you call them and you have an issue. It's really, really nice, the level of service you get from them. And by doing the First Mark challenge, you can find out once and for all whether you have the right insurance and whether you have it at the best price. So you schedule time with them, you go over your current insurance, you send them your existing policies, they review them, they go out, they shop their array of carriers, and they come back and they tell you either they can save you money, maybe then get you better insurance for the same price, or maybe they'll tell you, like they did Undivided Viewer Netta, that she should keep the insurance she already had. And that's really, to me, the sign of an honest company, that they're not just going to automatically try to get your business. They're going to let you know what the best option is for you. And sometimes the best option might be keep your existing policies. You don't need First Mark Insurance's help with this, at least not right now. But for other people like Ben and Leslie, they saved $1,500 a year. Casey in Covington told us that First Mark saved him 37% off their auto quotes. You're talking about hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a year just by scheduling time to do the First Mark challenge. So do yourself a favor, your family a favor, make time to do that today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, just when I think we're taking a positive step forward in the healthcare of our children, the woke people just take us 10 steps back. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, baby steps are fine. We got to take the wins where we can get them. You know, we had an exclusive on the show a couple weeks ago now where we talked about the Mary Bridge Children's Hospital Gender Clinic in Tacoma that decided after some pushback that it was going to reevaluate the gender care that it was giving in their clinic to minors, and basically saying, hey, we're going to take a more holistic approach instead of just having our therapists sign off on sending kids to the gender clinic so they can get hormones or whatever their heart desires, etc. So that's a win. That was a win. It is a win today. Obviously, we're waiting to see. I think they were going to start this new sort of strategy and approach in September. Until then, they weren't taking in new patients, putting kind of a pause on their program. So I think September will really tell us how serious Mary Bridge is about some of these changes that it outlined that we reported on exclusively 2 weeks ago. So we'll just take the win. Remember, there are wins. But then a story like this one in the Washington Free Beacon comes up, and I was like, for the love of God, can we just take care of kids? Can we just take care of their health issues and not worry about all these other ideological implications and the social and political agendas in hospitals? So this Washington Free Beacon story, now this goes back actually to 2022, but these lessons that we're going to discuss, if you can even call them that, have just surfaced in this report from the Free Beacon. The headline, Seattle Children's Hospital segregates doctors by race, asks them to tap, quote, repressed racial memories in leaked training. So there's some training. It was leaked to the Free Beacon. Held in August 2022, the training was mandatory for the gastroenterology department and divided participants into three racial caucuses, a white caucus, a black caucus, and a non-black person of color caucus to, quote, minimize harm to our black learners and facilitator. Oh my God, let me keep reading, but I gotta come back to that one. The training offers a window into how one of the top-ranked pediatric hospitals in the country has made racial identity, including white racial identity, a touchstone of its diversity efforts, from scholarships for minoritized medical students to a, quote, microaggression reporting system. Seattle Children's Hospital has a panoply? I've never heard that word before. Panoply? Will you Google that for me? Panoply. Somebody's going to make fun of me for not knowing what that is. Of programs that encourage doctors to view themselves and their patients through a race-conscious lens. What's a pan?
I think you were right the first time. Panoply. Mm. And it means a complete or impressive collection of things.
Okay. Why do you have to use words like panoply? panoply and make analogy. Me sound stupid. Anyway, but maybe that's fitting for a story about something really, really stupid. So, and again, it just goes back to this, like, you have such an important job at a children's hospital to care for kids. And I've said this a lot about DEI training and anti-racism training. If you've got a doctor and you have to train them, like, to not be racist if a black baby comes in and needs their life saved, like, I don't think training is gonna fix that. I really don't think you can train real racism out of people. And most people, I would say 99.999% of people, are not racist. And I would actually venture to guess that none of the doctors at Seattle Children's are racist. And by doing things like this, you treat them like they are racist, even if they don't know it. They have repressed racism. And if a child of color comes in, they might not give them quality care, which is offensive. If I were a doctor there, I would just be genuinely offended about it. So the Free Beacon got its hands on this training, the actual training, you know, the videos and the slides and all of that. So let's take a look, shall we? This slide is titled Deep Reflection Talking Circle. What does it mean for white people to be in community with black people? It asks them, in your life now, where do you notice being invested in whiteness that may not have been clear to you before? Can you identify how this leads to anti-black racism? Okay. Where does the concept of divesting whiteness feel sticky to you? In other words, where do you notice your defensiveness around this concept? Oh, okay, so if we're offended by the suggestion that we're like racist, then we're just being defensive. Like, we what practices can you implement in your daily life to combat anti-black racism and divest whiteness? Well, I can't divest whiteness because it is attached to my body. In fact, it is my largest organ, my skin. And if I take it off, I will surely die. What practices can you implement in your daily life? How can you support other white people in your community to join you in divesting whiteness? Nicole, would you like to be skinned alive with me? Can I offer you an invitation to also be skinned alive?
Yeah.
Or
I
we can
even
just
like that visual. I don't even like
just
it.
Hit up the tanning bed every day.
There you go.
Every single day, and then I'll be like, "Have I divested my whiteness enough for you?" Let's see. Commitment to action. This one's actually, it's not as much funny as it is like horrifying. It says addressing anti-black racism using the PHSA framework, which stands for Priorities, Habits, Systems, and Accountability. So Nicole bolded the part that's concerning. What accountability measures will we implement to ensure that we are actively and consistently holding ourselves accountable or dismantling anti-black racism and prioritizing our black families, patients, and peers? Prioritizing black families, patients, and peers. So does that mean prioritizing black patients above other patients? Again, we're talking about kids here. So does that mean that you are actively teaching these doctors to prioritize a black child who's sick, who comes in, over a white child or an Indian child or a Hispanic child? That seems, what's the word? That seems racist.
Racist.
That seems That's racist to me. All right. Speaking of racism, they also segregated, which is hilarious to me, that in order to teach people not to be racist, you choose to do it by segregating them into groups for this training on the basis of race. There were three groups: the BIPOC learners, the white learners, and learners in general. But remember, BIPOC was divided into black and then non-black people of color. And they were each asked to take a commitment to action. So if you were in one of the BIPOC groups, I commit to engaging in critical self-reflection and healing methods, such as counter storytelling, seeking support from other BIPOC individuals, and immersing myself in racial, ethnic experiences and group settings. So I commit to like cutting white people out of my life and healing myself from the racism that white people put me through. For white learners, I commit to practicing racial storytelling with at least one other white person to continue to work on my racial identity formation. So white people, you've got work to do.
You have to basically go tell people how you're racist.
Yes.
Go tell your friends how you act racist.
Yes. Have a coffee meeting, get together, you know, and just talk it out, hash it out, right? Learners in general, I commit to continue to reflect on my own racial identity development by, and then you have to do it. I commit to further examine how my racial identity impacts my role as a leader at Seattle Children's. I will do this by blank. But I go back to that first, can you go back to the actual article? Mm-hmm. It said the training mandatory, it divided participants into these three racial caucuses, a white caucus, a black caucus, and a non-black POC caucus to, quote, minimize harm to our black learners and facilitator. So what they're saying there is by virtue of like being in a room with white people would be harmful. Tell me again how that's teaching people not to be racist. Very similar to the groups that for fourth graders they had in the Olympia School District where there was going to be a BIPOC group for like fourth grade children and white kids weren't welcome because then it had to be a safe space. So you're teaching fourth graders that it wouldn't be a safe place if you were around white people. And you're also doing it to adults who are doctors, who are arguably some of the most empathetic, intelligent people on the planet, doctors who deal with children. And you feel like that they can't feel safe around white people? Well, that's concerning. All right, one more because Nicole was looking at this the training, but then the Seattle Children's website, and they go above and beyond DEI. So DEI isn't enough. Diversity, equity, inclusion. They had to add the letter J, so then they had to rearrange things to make it a handy little thing. So now they call it JEDI. J-E-D-I stands for justice, equity, diversity, inclusion, and anti-racism. So why didn't they do it like Jedi A? So they didn't add an A. Justice, equity, diversity, inclusion, and anti-racism in the pediatric residency program. God, I am sure that you are finding through that program the very best of the best. Because, of course, the number one goal, right, should be saving kids' lives. So it seems like you are laser-focused on saving the lives of children and not other unnecessary nonsense, for sure. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our daily subscriber show poll. Unbelievable, by the way. Unbelievable. We'll get to our daily subscriber show poll and questions and comments from all of you. First, coming up August 24th and 25th, there is going to be the Phase 2 grand opening at Natchez RV Resort. They've got 18 extra-large RV lot starting at just $79,900. It is absolutely stunning out there. We know some undivided viewers and listeners have already bought lots out there, so we're expecting many invitations. But they have, I mean, this is a first-class RV resort. They've got a 4,300 square foot luxury clubhouse. I've been in it. It's beautiful. It has an expansive great room, indoor-outdoor fireplace. It's an entertainer's dream. They've got a gourmet kitchen, gym, fitness center, showers, laundry for your guests. Outside, they've got pickleball courts, playground, dog park, miles of recreational trails all around. They also are just finishing the saltwater swimming pool and spa. I mean, this place is absolutely nice. And when you're not using your lot, they have a program where you can rent it out to other people and make some of your money back. So don't miss out on Phase 2 grand opening pricing, August 24th and 25th, with 18 extra large RV lots starting from just $79,900. Check it out, NatchezRVResort.com, NatchezRVResort.com. All right. I don't feel the need to like pull clips from President Trump's X Spaces thing. Like, I think that their combined reach on that with people who've shared it and talked about it and mentions on X was like over 1 billion. And a lot of people watched it. So I asked you guys if you tuned in for former President Donald Trump's X conversation with Elon Musk. Yes, no, or I couldn't get in because they had those tech issues on the front end. And they impacted a lot of things. Like we had a video that went down temporarily during this, what they called a DOS attack. 76% of people on Patreon said they did not watch it. Kind of surprises me. I don't know, just because maybe it's I don't know. Maybe it's because you were just waiting for me to talk about it, and I'm not going to rehash it today.
Dinner time, traffic time. I don't know. There's lots going on in the evening these days. So.
Yeah, Christopher Porter said, I had to listen to it via a broadcast on a blogger's YouTube channel because I couldn't get in with the volume that they had on the X page. E said, I'm not on X, won't ever be. Good for you. My mental health would be a lot better if I wasn't on X. Let me see. Mama of Six Rocks says, I don't use Twitter. Rick said it was pretty interesting. Trump and Musk having a quiet conversation with a few distractions. I hope they do it again. And by the way, Elon Musk invited Kamala Harris to
I saw that.
Do a Spaces thing. I don't believe she will. In fact, she put out this, like, their campaign put out this petty statement saying, calling it Twitter, and then in parentheses in their statement it says, we won't call it X. Like, you just look like a child. It's crazy.
It's a private company.
Yeah.
What? Okay.
Over on Locals, Matthew Cook says, I didn't listen to it live. I listened to it later. Todd Welch, I cannot stand either Trump nor Harris. I realize that Washington is going Democrat with its electoral vote, so I have the opportunity to just not vote for president as a demonstration of my dislike for both. I will say that Trump policies better represent me than Democrats. Yeah, and that's why I laugh so much at the whole who is Dave Reichert voting for question. Like, I swear he gets that question from the media more than any other actual substantive question.
Literally all they care about. And
it's all they care about.
The last thing you should care about. Who cares who he votes for? Care about what he's going to do for our state.
Well, and also, Kamala's going to win here anyway. So it's like, it's so annoying. It's so annoying. Yeah, so a lot of you saying you didn't, not a surprise that I did the poll on X as well. Mm-hmm. Not a surprise that on X, it's the opposite. 71% of people are saying they did participate. And that makes sense because the poll's on X and they're on X. And
did you listen?
On there, so.
Did you listen to
I tried at the beginning. Then they had the mm-hmm. issue, so I couldn't get on. And then I tuned in like partway through. Elon Musk is just so awkward.
He's a little awkward. When they were talking smart, about the so shooting part, that he just said, and that was a little bit, but then once they got past the shooting, I thought it got a little bit better, and yeah. He responded more and actually kind of interrupted a tiny bit. He didn't interrupt a lot, but interrupted, got Trump out of his spiels once in a while. Yeah. But getting, we had to get past the shooting part because that was the longest and most annoying part.
And it was really long at the like, I get it, you know, you got shot, that's serious, but he came during the convention, he said, I'm only going to tell this story once because it's too hurtful. And then he's told it a million times, which is fine, but like, don't say and make this big deal out of, I'm only going to tell it once. And then he went into the convention, this like 20 minute spiel about it.
Well, you know why? And because it worked for him convention week. And now he's trying to bring back that momentum that the shooting gave him.
I don't think it worked. I don't.
No, not.
Not at not the his convention. Speech. His speech was terrible.
But the shooting itself going into the convention actually ended up giving him some momentum that has come to a halt.
Kind of this kind of remind people, like, remember I was just shot a couple weeks ago?
Remember
when I
stood up with my hand?
Remember? Oh, that's so true. But okay.
It wasn't terrible, though. I think they're trying to pick it apart. And I'm like, yeah, it was two dudes talking. That's what they said it was going to be.
He said it was going to be a conversation. And that's exactly what it was. And Kamala Harris hasn't sat down for any sort of lengthy conversation with anyone. So the media will be more harsh about Donald Trump speaking freely for 2 hours with millions of people watching than it will be of Kamala Harris not speaking with anyone.
Right.
That's the, going back to the beginning of the show, that's the whole problem here. Mm-hmm. You can be critical of Trump for just off into nothing and just ranting and rambling. But like, also, like, let's talk about Kamala Harris not speaking to the media, because that seems important, does it not? All right, let's get into some comments. Matt Gilbert with a $10 super chat. I know it's easy to give up hope and lose your faith in your fellow man. I know the headlines. He does this every time.
I know.
Let me read it again. I know it's easy to give up hope and lose faith in your fellow man. I know the headlines day after day can be overwhelming. But the important thing you must remember is this. Things will get worse. You almost got me there for a second. Then I remembered that you post stuff like this occasionally. Kevin Grip with a $20 super chat. For Dory, that's so nice. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Trippy Hippie with a $2 super chat. It has a...
it's because you swore. So it's a bowl.
Goat. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And a poop emoji.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. Charles says, can I get a discount to exclude a portion of my taxable income from being taxed? Oh, referring to tipped workers. Can we just carve out an exception for podcasters? Like no tax for podcasters? That seems fair.
It seems like people are choosing it. It's kind of like a tip. We do it, and then they give us money.
How come I have to pay tips on the Super Chats?
Yeah.
That's a tip. That's absolutely a tip. I shouldn't have to pay tax on the Super Chats.
Vote Trump.
Trump. Captain Cranky Pants, the problem with not taxing tips is less government assistance when you need it, like Social Security when you get old. Yeah, so that's not... Unless you're reporting the income, though. So if you're reporting the income, it's still part of your income. You just don't get taxed on it.
But I think then, what he's saying is that...
I get what he's saying.
And people will abuse the system because that's what... Yeah. And Trump was asked this, I think, you know, when Hillary Clinton and him were debating, and he said... You know, or she accused him of not paying all, what he should be paying and whatever. And he said, that makes me smart.
Yeah.
So if you'd like the laws changed, go ahead and change it. But that makes me smart that I get away with what I do. And that is what this will be, is people will find ways to manipulate it, get out of paying taxes. And it will be rough on the system, I believe. We will lose a lot of money and we'll go more in debt and all that. Right. But I get why you wanted that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we've now raised minimum wage so high to... And people don't rely on that tip money, so maybe it should be taxed.
Yeah, I mean, you're keeping more of your money now, but I think to Captain Cranky Pants' point, you're going to get less on the back end.
Yes.
So is it a good trade-off? Charlie K, the press should be pressing to have Harris talk to them. They should be chopping at the bit. Chopping at the bit? Is that the phrase, or is it chomping at the bit?
I think it's chomping. Because you know that's me, what I'm not good does.
At these. Chomps. At the bit with a million questions. Any other elections at this point would have a more defined Democratic candidate. I agree. Old Sub Sailor with a $10 super chat for the pain of reading those slides. Thank you. It was painful. Well, when you think about the fact that they're supposed to be saving the lives of children, it's painful. If you try to put that out of your mind for a second, it's hilarious that these people are that like cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. And at the core of all of these DEI trainings, remember, someone got paid to teach those. Someone is making money to put those together and sit in front of you and say, hey, white person, you need to think long and hard about your racism.
Right.
So they got paid to do
that. And all of those doctors are getting paid to sit in those classes, I guarantee it. And that's while we have a extremely... we are in extreme need of doctors right now.
Yes.
I am hearing everywhere that nobody has enough doctors, nobody has enough nurses, and instead we're paying them to sit through this garbage.
Well, and I'm sorry, any reasonable doctor should walk out the door and say, I'm not doing this. I'm here to see patients and help kids, and I'm not racist. That's the thing, is like progressives will let people treat them like they're racist. If you're a progressive, aren't you supposed to be the one that's like, oh, I love everybody. I'm not anti-racist, because you say the conservatives are the racist ones. Yet you'll sit in a meeting and let someone lecture to you about how you are racist.
Right.
How does that make any sense?
And remember that they need you more than you need them.
100%. You walk out, you flip them the bird, and you say, I'm going to help my patients right now. Fire me. Dare you. Would love to see that. Videotape it and send us the video.
Please.
We would really appreciate that. All right. Good comments per the usual. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right. I've been a little hard on the media today, so I gave Brett Baer with Fox News credit earlier. So let me play a good Brett Baer clip. So Don Goldman, who's a campaign surrogate for Kamala Harris, he was on Fox News and made a claim that Brett Baer pointed out was simply not true.
If I'm Donald Trump, I understand why he doesn't want a debate. Kamala Harris is
he's accepted three prosecutors.
He said yes to
September 4th, September 10th, September 17th. He said yes to a lot of them. So it's not that he's obviously afraid to debate.
No. He had agreed to September 10th on ABC.
With Biden, who got pushed out.
What's the difference? Why should he not debate whoever the candidate is on September 10th, as he agreed to? What is the difference between candidate Biden and candidate
it's fine.
Harris?
He said he would do it. I'm just saying he's also agreed to other debates. You said he hasn't agreed to others. He has. It's the Kamala Harris campaign that hasn't agreed on the other side.
Deer in headlights look was priceless. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A special thank you to our subscribers who allow us to do this show full time, put all of our energy and enthusiasm on doing what the old media simply cannot or will not do. Reminder, we are going to be in downtown Seattle tomorrow. We'll tease it on the show again. Prior to that, we're going to have a rally for democracy, the press conference Attorney General Bob Ferguson should have had tomorrow. tomorrow at 3 p.m. outside the office of the Attorney General in Seattle, 800 Fifth Avenue. So hopefully we'll see you there. If you've not become a subscriber already, you can sign up for just $5 a month at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. See you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.